Thank you for listening to this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more teachings or to subscribe to our podcast, as well as information about our congregation, visit our website at forerunnerfellowship.org.
Well, when I was 21, I was a college student. I was going to UTA here, here locally. We call that UT Almost. When I was a senior in high school, in the spring of my senior in high school, you know, kind of the popular topic was, what college are you going to? And I was very confident that I was going to UT in Austin. And when I was saying that, the response was always like, "Oh, really? You got accepted already?" And I was like, "Accepted? What do you mean accepted?" And they were explaining, you have to apply to go to college. I was like, "Oh, you have to apply to go to this school. I've never applied to go to a school." So I real erratically was like trying to find a college, and I figured out that UT in Arlington was willing to take me very quickly. And I was like, sweet, UT Almost it is, because UT Austin did not work out. But I had just been walking with the Lord for a couple years, and I was a college student. And I was one of those guys who had spent my whole life living for myself. And then when I met the Lord at the age of 19, I was living in such a way that it could be described as, he who's forgiven much loves much. And so I was fully given over to love the Lord and fill my schedule with as many things as I could. That were, you know, a worship service, a teaching meeting, a Bible study, all of those type of things. I was trying to fill as much of my weekly schedule as I could, and I was also working full time while I was in school, and I was working at Best Buy at the time. I was in management there as a supervisor, and I was trying to start Bible studies. I would start them up, they'd go for a few weeks, and then they would always fizzle out, but I was not deterred. I would always try and restart them. And so I was in the middle of another campaign of trying to get more people to meet with me during a lunch break and read the Bible and just pray and have some fellowship, and that's what I was trying to do. So I went up to this new guy who was in customer service, and I said, "Hey man, I'm starting a Bible study. Would you want to be a part of it?" And I kind of described what it would be like, and he said, "Hey, that sounds cool, but my buddy just started this prayer meeting in his living room. Would you want to come check that out?" And I was like, "Cool, prayer meeting, that sounds cool and weird answer to being invited to a Bible study, but yeah, prayer meeting." So he says, "Yeah, my friend just started this daily prayer meeting. We've been doing it for a few months at this point, and you should come check it out." And I was like, "Great, when is it?" He said, "Well, it's here, you know, not too far from here, and it's at 5:00. And I was like, "Oh, you know, because I'm a supervisor here at Best Buy, I could never get off at 5:00. There's no way that I'd be able to get the time off. It's like prime retail hour. There's no way." And he says, no, 5 a.m. I said, "Oh, that 5:00. I said, let me pray about it, and I'll get back to you." Not too long after that, I show up to this wild-eyed, red-headed man's living room at 5:00 in the morning, and I find this group of 20-year-olds who are praying every day at 5 a.m., and they are just, like, going for it, praying for revival, praying for the city, praying for a move of the Holy Spirit, and I'm like, this is wild. I have found a group of people that I can really run with. At that point in time, I was, you know, just a couple years walking with the Lord, and at that point, I had grown to this kind of point of dissatisfaction, and I was honestly arrogant with having this thought, but it was the reality. I was thinking, I'm tired of being the most fiery in the room. Now, I had only been walking with the Lord for a couple years, but I was like, man, I really want to be, because at that point, people were saying, "Man, you're really provoking in worship or in prayer or in, you know, reading the word or whatever, but I was like, I want to be provoked by somebody. I want to be provoked by others. And I was really looking for that. And when I found this group of people in Brad's living room, I was like, oh my gosh, I have found the people that I want to run with, that we're provoking one another. We're going for it. And this is something that I can really build my life around. So I started coming to these prayer meetings. I wasn't there every day, but many of the days of the week, I was a part of these prayer meetings, and the prayer meetings began to increase. At that point in time, we were doing 1 hour every morning, and then we started doing 1 hour in the evening, and it was starting to gain momentum and build, and we were like, this is more than just a daily prayer meeting. During that time, we also started doing Bible studies, like looking up what is the Lord doing, what is the Lord doing with us specifically, and we started looking into and studying what is the priesthood. We had heard kind of the concept from the International House of Prayer in Kansas City that they were referring to what they were doing, their model, as inspired by or in the spirit of the Tabernacle of David. They would refer to it as priesthood, and we were like, that sounds interesting, or something that sounds unique. Let's look into it. So we started researching, and we started doing a Bible study into it. And so I want to share with you a few of the things that we began finding. One of the first things that we found was there was a difference between the Tabernacle of Moses and the Tabernacle of David. Tabernacle of Moses included the tent that housed the Ark of the Covenant. It was in the Holy of Holies. It was separated by another part of the tent that was called the Holy Place, and then there was an outer court. This is where the animal sacrifices were taking place. It was part of the sacrificial system. We began to look at, like, man, there's a lot of detail that was given for the Tabernacle of Moses. There was very, very specific details about the way that the different furnishings were made, what they were made of, the way that the tent was prepared, and all of these different things. Well, we also learned that during the time of David, there was an additional tabernacle. A tabernacle is just another word for tent. But there was an additional tent that was made, and we were like, okay, so there is a difference. What we found was that at the same time that the Tabernacle of Moses was in operation on one of the hilltops, one of the high places, about 6 miles away from Jerusalem, David established a new worship order with its own tent. The only difference, though, is that he took what was originally in the Tabernacle of Moses, the Ark of the Covenant, and he transported it to his new tent to establish a worship order. Now, one of the major differences with this new worship order was there were no animal sacrifices. In this tabernacle, he set up those who would minister to the Lord, kind of in a same spirit of worship and thanksgiving, except there were no animal sacrifices. These were sacrifices of praise and of worship and of thanksgiving, and God found it to be acceptable. It was different than what was happening, and in fact, it was operating at the same time, just separated by a few miles. But it was operating at the same time in the city of David, which would later be Jerusalem. And he began to establish a whole army, a new order of priests who would minister to him. Now, one of the things that I was really excited about whenever we started learning about this was, oh my gosh, there's a purpose for 1st and 2nd Chronicles. I thought that was just the chapters you skip over. But we looked at it and we were like, wow, these details are very specific and very detailed of what was going on. So I'm going to give you just a few things that we began learning about. In 1 Chronicles 15, we learn about the ark being brought to Jerusalem. I don't have any verses for the slides because I'm just going to go through this, but in 1 Chronicles 15, we learn that there were nearly 900 ministers or priests who were given charge to bring in the Ark of the Covenant, but then also to minister to him. And we learned about the way that they ministered to him. And again, this was a worship order of prayer and of worship. Specifically, I'm going to pick up here in 1 Chronicles 15, verse 17. The Levites appointed Heman. Now, at first, I thought this was He-Man, like He-Man and She-Ra, but it's not. It's Heman. So the Levites appointed Heman, the son of Joel, and of his brethren, Asaph, Ethan, Zechariah, Ben, Jaaziel, Shemiramoth, Jehiel, Uni, Eliab, Benaiah, Maaseiah, Mattathiah, a lot of As and Ayahs, Eliphiah, Mechaniah, Obed-Edom. Now this is interesting. Obed-Edom was the man who was privileged to have the Ark of the Covenant rest at his house for a time, for a few months. If you'll remember the story, the Ark of the Covenant was being brought from Kirjath-Hiram, and they tried to transport it, but they were in their own zeal trying to do something with the right heart, but they did it incorrectly. And one of the guys who was serving tried to brace the Ark of the Covenant as it was about to fall, and he was struck dead. And so that really scared everybody, obviously, when somebody gets struck dead for touching something, like, and then you get struck dead. It's like, whoa, we really need to be treating this differently. So they put the Ark of the Covenant in this man's house, Obed-Edom, and David goes to researching, how are we supposed to actually move the Ark of the Covenant? Well, anyway, Obed-Edom is incredibly blessed as a result. Not only is he blessed, it provokes David and the others, like, wow, this is something that is really worth our time and effort to get right. We want to have the Ark of the Covenant, which represented God's presence on the earth. We want to have this treated properly, but we also want to be able to draw near and minister to him, as is rightfully so. So Obed-Edom gets in on this. I have to imagine, if he wasn't already put in there, he volunteered himself because he was like, I was so blessed. I have to imagine, you know, his crop was just thriving, or whatever he was doing was just, you know, going crazy. And so he was in on it, and then a couple others, they were gatekeepers. Now, in verse 19, it says, there were singers. Then there were those who sounded the cymbals. Then those who were to play the strings, and those who were playing the harps. And then there was an instructor who was in charge of the music because he was skillful. And we began reading these, and it's like, they were doing a whole, like, choral call and response. They had instruments. And what they were doing is they were surrounding the Ark of the Covenant in this new tent, in this new worship order, and God wasn't striking anyone dead. We saw that there was a way to treat the presence of the Lord that he was not okay with, because somebody was struck dead as a result. But then there was a way that they were interacting with God's presence, and he was not just okay with it. He was pleased by it. And we began to see the Psalms. We would read the Psalms, and the context of many of these were that they were written in the context of David's tabernacle. And we began to see, oh my gosh, the Psalms are not just poems. These are songs written in the midst of the presence of God in the context of worship that was happening night and day. And so we began to look at this and think, oh wow, this was something more than what we ever knew. This was a worship order that God was not just okay with, acceptable of, he really liked it. And so we began to pray, Lord, raise up a modern day priesthood. I can remember so clearly being in one of those living room prayer meetings, and I was praying, Lord, raise up a modern day priesthood. And one of those times, I remember the Lord responding pretty immediately. It wasn't an audible voice, but it was very clear to me. And he said, I'm so glad it only took you 10 years to answer the call. And I was like, oh my gosh. And I immediately remembered back, at the time I was 22, I remembered back to when I was around 11 or 12, At that time, I had I was raised in the Catholic Church, but at that time, I had decided by around 11 or 12, I was like, you know what? When I grow up, I want to be a dad. I want to be a husband. I want to be a family guy. That's like one of the main things I want to do. I really felt that was something that I wanted to do. I was not walking with the Lord, but that was just something I had settled in my heart. But around 11 or 12, I can remember sitting in one of these Catholic masses, the church service, and I remember just having this kind of like draw, like, I think I'm supposed to be a priest. And I remember looking at the front of the room and seeing the priest, you know, in the Catholic church context, that's like the pastor, the person who kind of facilitates the whole service, gives a message and all of that. But I remember looking up there and saying, you know what? I know that in the Catholic Church, at least, there's a requirement of celibacy. They don't get married. They don't have families. I don't know why I feel this weird draw to be a priest, but whatever. I already decided in my heart that I would be a husband and a father. But I remembered that moment when the Lord said, "I'm so glad it only took you 10 years to answer the call." And I knew in that moment that from the age of like 12, the Lord had called me, but I dismissed it, not understanding what the priesthood actually was. And so I began to like, oh my gosh, I'm supposed to be one of these modern day priests. What does that even look like? And so we started searching this out more and more. And at that time, Brad had just started pulling back from full-time work. He began to raise support as a missionary would to go out into the mission field. And I saw that as an example. We also heard of those who were up in Kansas City at the House of Prayer. There were many who were doing that as their full-time vocation as well. And I was like, I'm supposed to do that. I just know that it's not now. And so I sat on that word, and there would be many times, whether it was up in Kansas, we were going to Kansas City so many times a year. We would take road trips up there. I mean, we would do it very on the cheap. We'll say it that way. We were, you know, in our 20s, we would pile in way too many people that should be in a car. We would drive up there through the middle of the night. We'd get to the House of Prayer at like 7 or 8 in the morning. We'd take a nap in the prayer room, and then that would save us at least one night in a hotel, not a hotel, motel. We would stay, you know, House of Prayer. We'd go around. We'd be in a conference if there was a conference, and then we'd pack all those people into, you know, one or two motel rooms. The like nastiest motel rooms. I mean. It was bad. We were very poor, but we were doing what we could to be exposed to and be inspired by and experience the House of Prayer. And so we would do that many times. And as we would be up there, there would be certain messages that would come up. And one of the ones that I just remember so clearly is out of Luke 2, talking about the ministry of Anna, who was a prophetess, who was a widow from her youth. She was married only a short time, but for years and years and years, up until she was in her 80s, it said that she ministered to the Lord in the temple with fasting and with prayer. And out of that message, many times it would be either Mike Bickle or somebody else, but the message would be, if there was a way for you to do this as your full-time occupation, to be one of these modern day priests, would you do it if the Lord would make a way, whether it's finances, whether it's your schedule or some other thing that's standing in the way, if you would respond. And I would respond every time, and I never felt the peace that it was time yet. Well, one of the times Brad was giving that same message here in Arlington, and he gave the message, and at the end I responded as I always did. I stood and said, you know, if there was a way, if the Lord would make a way, I would do it. And that was not the first time that I had ever responded to that message. That was, I don't know how many times, but I had done that many times. And Brad was tracking with kind of my process and where I was going with that. And so I responded, and Brad came and prayed for me. He was like, "Lord, he knows he wants to do it. He knows that you're calling him to do it. We're just looking for the timing. Would you release the timing?" So I went and sat down, and this was a number of years after that first encounter where I prayed, "Lord, raise up a modern-day priesthood." And he said, He said, I'm so glad that it only took you 10 years to answer the call. So I'm sitting there and I'm like, Lord, release the timing. And it's as if he continued the conversation years later. And I heard him say this. He said, I waited 10 years. You wait 10 years. And so I was like, oh my gosh, you speak in decades. You have a conversation that lasts decades. And you say one sentence, 10 years, and then you wait another 10 years and have the next sentence, and then you do that again 10 years later. Who does that? Oh my gosh, your ways are not our ways. At that point in time, it had already been 7 years into the journey. So I was like, well, 10 years is 10 years, but I'm 7 years in. I can wait three more. And so at the end of that 10-year period, I began to make the transition. At that time, I was a public school teacher, and I began to make the transition. And so for the past 6 years, I've been full-time in the house of prayer. I raise full-time support, and we're going to meet a few others who do as well here in just a moment. But we have established here in our city a modern-day priesthood that in the spirit of the Tabernacle of David ministers to the Lord with prayer and with worship, and we do it 20 hours a day. For those of you who aren't aware, there's only a couple houses of prayer in the United States that are 24/7. That's the goal, that's the dream of so many, but the reality is only a couple do. As of right now, the prayer room, which is what we would call Forerunner Fellowship's mission, is one of the strongest houses of prayer. If you go over there, you may not see that, but it's one of the strongest houses of prayer in the United States. And with 20 hours a day, we have established a night and day ministry to the Lord. It's prayer, it's worship, and it's something that we believe the Lord is pleased with. We began to study about the way that the Lord was doing these things, and then we began to put them in place. So here in just a moment, let me have Tyler, Caitlin, Robbie, there he is. You guys go ahead and come on up. We're gonna do a little bit of a Q&A. I'm gonna interview them. This is something that is kind of unique. So in our congregation, we currently have 12 missionaries that are raising support. We do this as our occupation, as our vocation, and it's kind of uncommon for that to be the case. What we're going to do here in just a moment is I'm going to be asking them some questions, and I want you guys to be able to hear them, hear their hearts, hear their responses. But as a congregation, you know, we say that Forerunner Fellowship has a mission. Our mission, in a similar way that other congregations would have, like a soup kitchen or a pantry or a ministry for, you know, clothing or shelter or whatever for others, or an evangelism ministry. Our ministry, our mission is the prayer room. And so with that being said, I wanted to give an opportunity for us as a congregation to be able to hear from some real life people who are doing this. And so we're going to go ahead and transition into that. I'm going to jump up here as we do for panels in the proper panel organization here. And I'm going to ask them some questions. So I didn't give them the questions exactly ahead of time, so I'm interested to hear. I'm interested to hear what their responses are. So first off, we have Tyler. Yeah, you can clap. Tyler, Caitlin, and Robbie. Are you giving another microphone? Mm-hmm. You're glorious. Thank you. You should do like AV or something for your job. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, am I on it?
All right. Maybe give him this for a minute.
We'll just wait. Okay. All right, so first, what is
to do the hours of your week. Why do you do this? And, well, first, say how long you've been doing this, and then what got you started?
I started off at as an extern, as probably most of us have, from IHOP, and I've been doing this for almost 4 years now, coming up pretty soon. The reason why I started doing this is kind of, it caught me off guard, because we were in a staff meeting at IHOP, or at TPR, and Brad was actually talking about our finances and how we were $25,000 in debt, and which isn't a new thing for TPR to be in. But we were talking about how the Lord was prompting them to give to. They had a savings about, I think, $75,000, and that savings kept dwindling down, and it just kept bleeding, and it was down to like $55,000 or something, and so Brad was like, you know, we're going to pay off some debts, and we're going to pay off that debt with the $50,000, and then give the rest of the money away to another house of prayer. And though that for other people who might see that as like, well, now you're completely like, you're completely giving away everything that you have to pay off, like other bills and stuff. That to me was like a ministry that trusts the Lord so much that they're going to put themselves out there for the Lord to provide for them. And I was like, seeing the leadership, seeing everything was just kind of like, this is safe leadership, and this is leadership that I know trusts the Lord. And they do it by the actions, not just by their words or by like deciding something behind the scenes. They actually are bringing everyone in to that reality. And the Lord was really talking to me about Mary of Bethany at that time, and just sitting at his feet. And a huge thing in my whole life was every other job that I had that I was doing, I had a deep dissatisfaction and a deep cry for impact. And I was like, it was like a burden in my heart. Like my heart was in pain every day I would go to any other job other than TPR, because of the calling of my life to impact in a greater measure, not just like from the stage, but impact in connection to God's will and stuff like that. Yeah.
So I've been full-time at TPR 6 years as of yesterday. Yeah, it's kind of, I got to actually share my whole testimony at Encounter Service at the prayer room last night. So I'll give like the short version. In high school, and then with a really clear confirmation in college, I had this moment where God was calling me Mary of Bethany, just like Tyler was saying, just to sit at his feet and like, quote unquote, waste everything on him. And it would look like a waste to other people, but Jesus actually sees it as like really, really precious and valuable. So I knew from that time, like whatever I do for the rest of my life, I'm going to do it with the heart of Mary of Bethany. Like I want to be a worshiper. I want to live my life just like poured out completely for him. And so I ended up at an internship at the place we keep talking about, IHOP in Kansas City. I was there in 2012. And during that internship, I had a moment in their 24/7 prayer room where I was reading Luke 18:7-8. And if you've ever been in the prayer room here, this is the verse that we have on the wall. And it's actually on the wall in Kansas City, too. And I had seen that verse every single day I was in the prayer room and like never thought twice about it. But this day I was like reading and journaling this verse. And it says, will not God give justice to his elect who cry out to him day and night? And I was like, cool, justice, day and night prayer, like all good things. And then we get to the second half of the verse, and it says, nevertheless, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on the earth? And I was staring at it like, wait, what just happened? My nice, understandable prayer verse just turned into an end times verse? Like, what is happening? So I'm staring at it, and suddenly, like, the light bulb went on, and I realized, like, I felt like God just unveiled it to me, like, oh my gosh, when Jesus comes, he's looking for people who are praying night and day for justice, and only he can bring justice when he comes. Like, that's the only way we get full justice on the earth. He's looking for his faithful elect to cry out day and night for the return of the Son of Man, who is the righteous judge. And in that moment, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's all real. Like, there's this whole thing God's doing in the earth. And I accidentally stumbled into the middle of it, and I didn't even realize. I just came here to be Mary Bethany on the prayer room floor, and oh, hello, I'm in the end time prayer movement. So from that moment, I was like, I'm doing this the rest of my life. I'm going to do the ministry school at IHOP, and then I'm going to go somewhere and find a house of prayer. So just like Tyler, I ended up doing one semester externship at the prayer room and just felt like this is it. Like, everything about this place just clicks with what God's putting on my heart. So I've been there for 6 years now.
Yeah, so I've been here as a missionary for 3 years this past week. What was today? The 22nd? Yeah, 2 days ago. Yeah, it's like it's literally 3 years. At different levels. I started off part-time and then had a really long season of working many jobs to sustain that, and then just recently got to be full-time, which is awesome. So yeah, the thing that got me into the prayer movement was in 2014, I was finishing up my associate's degree in English education, and the thought of spending my days sitting in a classroom just killed my soul. I was so discontented with the idea of that being my future for the rest of my life. And I love teaching, which was the ironic part. I love to teach, but the idea of that being all I do was not satisfying at all. And so 2014, that summer, my dad sent me and my brothers to a conference at IHOP. I was mostly going as the older brother chaperone because this conference was for teenagers. It was their Fascinate conference, but I was in my 20s, whatever. But I get there, and Mike did the Anna call and said, if money wasn't an object, if there is no hindrance, would you give yourself to night and day prayer and worship? And instantly my heart was like, that's what you were made for. If the reason why school doesn't, like being a teacher doesn't sound awesome, is because you weren't made for that. You were made for this. And so I, you know, raised my hands. They came and prayed for me. I fell out in the spirit for the first time in my entire life. It was just an awesome encounter with the Lord. And over that summer, the Lord confirmed over and over again that that was what I was supposed to do with my life. One moment that was really marking was when my dad took us to visit some little Pentecostal church out in the middle of nowhere, because he was going to do a sermon on family ministry or something like that. And we walk into the church. The pastor greets us. He's talking to my dad and my mom. And he looks at me, and he gets this glazed over look, like he's hearing something, but it's not in the room. And so he comes out of it, he looks at me, he says, are you a musician? I'm like, sort of. I don't really play anything at that point. He's like, the Lord just told me you're David, and you're gonna sit in a tent with him all your days. I'm like, I just responded to this Anna call like a few weeks ago, and now this pastor I've never met is declaring this over my life. So that summer was really marking for me. Went to a couple other IHOP conferences, and through a series of events, ended up at IHOP U. Did 4 years, and even in the beginning of my time there, the Lord said, you're going to end up in Texas, because this crazy guy in Texas got you to say, you know, when I graduate IHOP U, if the Lord doesn't say something else, I'll move to Texas. And the Lord was like, well, you said it, so now you're going to move to Texas. And here you are, here I am.
Temporary or long-term mission, you know, evangelism or church planting or something like that. So we all do this as our local long-term plan. And part of our process is to raise support. We call it partnership development. So in those conversations, I'm sorry if that's sugar. part of that process is describing what we do or what is our role in ministry. So what I'd like to hear is when you're talking to those during those partnership meetings or while raising support, how do you describe what you do to someone who's like brand new to House of Prayer, to this modern day priesthood?
Well, it's super fresh because I just finished partnership, so I can describe it a little bit. For people who aren't initially like aware of House of Prayer, the prayer movement, like why this is a valid lifestyle vocation, I always start off by saying, is Jesus worthy of being praised 24/7, every day of the week, forever and ever? And they're always like, well, yeah, he deserves everything. I'm like, well, it's not okay that that's not happening in my city. Like, even though we're like one of the stronger houses of prayer, we're not 24/7 yet, and that's not okay. And so I always start there, and it usually will get, they'll get a hold of the vision, like, oh, you're right, that's not okay. In heaven, he's getting that 24/7. Like, the angels and the elders are doing this constantly. And so from there, once I've described why House of Prayer, that's where I would get into the logistical stuff of, oh, yeah. And I help make sure that there's actually musicians to do the House of Prayer. So, yeah.
Yeah, I often start in a similar place talking about Revelation, and what we see in that picture in Revelation 4 is that all the creatures and beings and angels in heaven are surrounding the throne of God. And it says day and night, they never cease to say, holy, holy, holy. Like right now, it's happening. And as long as you've been alive, it's happening. And since creation of the world and before creation of the world, it's been happening 24/7 if they count hours 24/7 in heaven. And Jesus said, like, to pray on earth as it is in heaven. He wants earth to reflect what's happening in heaven. And if Jesus is worthy in heaven, he's worthy on earth. Like, he deserves that. So I tell people, like, we're currently going 20 hours a day doing prayer and worship nonstop as a ministry to God. And it's great if it blesses people. We want to bless people. But mostly we're doing it for him. And we're really seeking to mirror on earth in our city what's happening in heaven.
Yeah, I have a scripture from Acts 6, verses 2 through 4. Then the 12 disciples summoned the multitude of the disciples and said, "It is not desirable that we should leave the word of God and serve tables. Therefore, brethren, seek out among you 7 men of good reputation, full of the Holy Spirit and wisdom, whom we may appoint over this business. But we ourselves will continually give ourselves to prayer and the ministry of the word." And this was like in the context of like the church growing, and then they were like, "We have food, let's make a McDonald's." And then they were passing out food, and they were like, "This is a business, we need to not do this and give ourselves to prayer." It's everything that they said on top of just kind of like the practicals of we're here to kind of disciple the city into prayer. It's like disciple the churches around us. Like, we, the reason why we're a parachurch organization is because we want denominations from all across the city to come and unify in prayer and to be a greater community, not bound by you go to this church or you go to this church or whatever, but by a people who is committed to day and night prayer. And I mean, the main mission of TPR is to be a fire starter all across the nation, planting houses of prayer, giving people the ability and language to, and the tools in order to start daily prayer meetings, and how does that look, and ask for commitments, and even get missionaries of their own. And yeah, those are a bunch of little practicals.
One of the just a statement, what it's like if I could really just give a summary of, I want my ministry to be an impact in this world. What would that be?
I was prepared for this one, and I didn't even have another question. So in Isaiah 60-something, in there, there's a passage that says, I've set watchmen on your walls, O Jerusalem. And it's the idea of intercessors, watchmen, contending for Jerusalem to be established as the city of God and a praise in the earth. So for me, my vision for being an intercessor is I'm a watchman on the walls of Jerusalem and asking for revival or justice, even in our own city, ultimately has its fulfillment in Jesus returning and ruling in Jerusalem. So I can pray for everything under the sun from the context of contending for the Lord's will for that city on the other side of the planet. And so that's how I pray. And all of my sets are centered on praying for Jerusalem in some way.
I think of the verse that says that the Lord is enthroned on the praises of his people. And there's something like very real about having God's will be done and having like the kingdom come to earth when we kind of talk that way. That is made possible by creating an atmosphere of prayer and worship. Like worship actually like spiritually clears the way for God to do what he wants to in a region. So like I worship lead on a human trafficking set, and we're praying for the ending of human trafficking. But in between the prayer times during those 2 hours, we're doing worship. And I don't think it would actually be as effective if we were just praying and not actually worshiping as well. Like there's something about worship that, creates an atmosphere, like almost creates a runway for God to answer prayers and do what he wants to do. So even during the times in the prayer room when we're not praying, we're just worshiping, like it really is bringing God's will to earth and like creating the way for him to do what he wants to do.
Yeah, this is a hard question to answer because I don't necessarily know. but I just find that some of my greatest weakness is trying to build my own kingdom and trying to, in my own kingdom in terms of, like, I want to create the best song or I want to have the most impact or I want to do all this stuff. And it often craves the attention of many people or the attention of being on the stage or having that special chorus or whatever. And my really, like, I want all of that impact, but I want it to come the right way. And when it comes to the temptation of my life to grab the things that, or go after the things that that I know the Lord has called me to, I need to come set myself back. And really being at TPR, the goal of being here is to learn how to be hidden, you know, is to learn how to sit before that audience of one, no matter if it's just the usher in the room or if the usher isn't even in the room, you know, is that understanding the reality of, like, God spoke to me this at the beginning of my job here at TPR was, would you rather have the multitude sing your song here on earth and have little impact in heaven, or would you have rather have 3 or 4 people know your songs in the house of prayer and forever in heaven be a household name, you know? And I was like, Lord, I really want that, but I know the temptation of my life is to consistently push against that and to strive for my own stuff. And this, I feel like I'm probably off the question, but I'm sorry, but the impact that I want is to submit myself under the will of God.
This concludes this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more information about our congregation, visit forerunnerfellowship.org. Thank you.